Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. I am honored to be joined today by a coach who put in 44 years with a career record of 263, 196, and 3, which at the time, all the way up until he retired, was the winningest active coach in NCAA football. He's had an incredible career and seen a lot of changes over the times. We're going to talk about some of those things today, and I'm excited to have him here, the retired football coach at East Stroudsburg University, Denny Dowds. Coach, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, it's always be glad to be able to sit down and talk football and talk about things that have affected the game and also the great values of the game, too.
Coach, you have been at East Stroudsburg for a long time, 52 years, including 44 as the head football coach. And before we got going here, you and I were talking about just the changes you've seen over time and how much the game has really changed and the focuses have changed. And we see a lot more in our coaching profession now who have essentially become specialists. You've commented that there's some good things and maybe some bad things about that. But talk a little bit about some of the changes you've seen, some of the major changes you've seen over the course of your career.
Hey, Keith, when I showed up here in 1966, we were one platoon. So you can't get any further back than that and dealing with that. So therefore, you know, you coached the offense and you turned around and coached the defense in the same session and deal with that. Now, a year later, we went to two platoon. So and we thought that was a big deal. And then half the teams in the league had gone that way in the PSAC. So we thought we would be right up there with the front runners and being able to get that done in a couple of years. And later I became the defensive coordinator. So that even specialized it more. You coach one position and you coach half the responsibilities of offense and defense. And then you took care of the special teams that affected your aspect of it. Otherwise, offense would take care of maybe the field goals and PATs, where the defense would take care of punt returns, kickoff coverage, and all of that. So that started in about 1968. And then I was an assistant coach then, did that up until about 74, when the head coach took a leave of absence to finish up his PhD. And they said, hey, I was going to hang up the whistle as well. So the AD came along and said, hey, how would you like to be the head coach? And I said, hey, that sounds pretty good. And we've done that ever since.
Coach, you mentioned to me that you are the last professor / head football coach in the PSAC. And we were talking about, you know, even back a few decades ago when I was in college, that was just kind of the way that the small college football worked a lot like the high schools, and that your professors, your teachers, were people who would get release time to go and coach their sport. And now we've really evolved, even at the small college level, where those guys are only football focused. They're not teaching any classes.
Well, like we said, you know, that when we came in, everybody, I mean, all coaches and all sports and all the different teams in Division II and Division III weren't around at that time, but the small colleges at the time, all coaches came in as professors, and they taught their particular expertise in particular fields, and then they would get release time. And they went and give an example. Maybe they had to teach four classes. It's pretty simple. And maybe they would teach three classes and get a quarter time release for coaching and dealing with that. But that's the way everybody was at that particular time. And like everything else in society, we've become specialists in athletics, and football is no different. And they started to hire individual coaches to coach particular teams, and that was it. In fact, we had a young man in our school here, Mike Twilliger, he was one of our assistant coaches. He became the first full-time assistant coach in the Pennsylvania State Athletic Conference. today, as you said, I was the last one that still taught a class and coached in dealing with that. All the rest of the coaches in the PSAC are full-time athletic coaches.
Coach, when you look at that change, and you mentioned, you know, used to be one platoon football, you learned to coach both sides of the ball, and now we see these guys really not far removed from their playing careers who become specialists, like, for example, an offensive line coach. And I could think back to, you know, my time as an offensive coordinator at the college level, that I had some position assistants who knew their craft really well, but didn't know other parts of the game. Do you feel today's coach maybe is not as well-rounded because they didn't have that experience on both sides of the ball?
Well, you know, that's a good discussion point right there. But here's the deal. The deal is this. The game has become so sophisticated. And the high details, I mean, what that line coach you happen to know knows in his base knowledge of being able to coach offensive line, that was never around. When I showed up here 53 years ago to be able to coach, that coaching wasn't that detailed in being able to coach an offensive position and a defensive position. As the positions became more refined and the game became more sophisticated, I'll give you an example. Today you go out and watch a high school game and you see them throw the ball. Those kids are throwing the ball better than when I came here 53 years ago, and the talent and the skill that the quarterbacks had to throw the ball. Not saying that they were great athletes, and given today's coaching and detail to the game, they wouldn't have been as great today as they were then, but that knowledge just wasn't available. And with that knowledge available and more time it takes to teach all of those particular fundamentals and detail of the game, it's where you get your specialists and so forth. As I said, we're just following society when it comes down to picking that person to be a specialist in some particular aspect, particularly offensive line, too.
Yeah, definitely. I can agree with you. The game has become so much more sophisticated. And really think back to a time, you know, I'm thinking when I played in the 80s, my dad was a high school football coach, the teams he played, you didn't see a lot of teams really spreading the field out. You know, a lot of times you could play that game in a hallway, everybody's running between the tackles and everything was packed in there. And it really was, in a lot of ways, kind of, I don't want to call our game less physical right now, but it was different in terms of it was more kind of brute force rather than you look at it now, it seems like it's become much more focused on being a thinking man's game.
Well, you know, you look at it, if you equate it to other things, you look in medicine. I mean, you used to go to family doctor and he'd take care of everything. Now you go to a specialist to take care of one aspect of an illness or something that's bothering you. Same thing with a dentist. So I'll be a prime example. How about the modern warfare compared to, I don't know, Pickett's charge at Gettysburg? I mean, that Pickett's charge at Gettysburg was a frontal attack. Well, back in the day, a lot of teams would play the game within about a 12-yard limit on the field. They'd have two tight ends, tackles, guards, and a center, and they got three guys in a backfield, or maybe you had a wing or something like that, and that's where they would play. The field's 53 and a third yards wide, but they wouldn't spread them out and so forth. Now, today, you got to defend not only the distance it is to your goal line, but you got to defend the width of the field at 53 and a third yards. And they got people that come out and line up in one thing, and all of a sudden they change to something else. They can shift, they can motion. And one play, it's this personnel. Another play, it's a different personnel. So if they got different people in there, are you going to have different people to defend them and so forth? You never did that when I first came here in dealing with that. So if you look at the society and where we've gone, and well, I don't care whether it's medicine or business or warfare, it is more diverse. It is not that pure frontal attack that Pickett had. I mean, come on, you look at all the special forces we got, and great men that dedicate their lives to country, to be able to, and we're thankful for that, to be able to have that situation. And when they do it in a precision way. Well, let's face it. If you're playing 11 on 11 and 12 yards of the field, if you had bigger, stronger, faster guys, you're going to win. Mm-hmm. Today, you don't necessarily have to have 11 of those guys. If you got a kid that can throw the ball, you got a kid that can run like the wind, and he can catch a little bit, and you get him on a mismatch with one guy, you throw the ball to that one guy. Hey, he catches the ball and crosses the goal line. That's still 7 points. And you might have another kid on the other side of the line of scrimmage. They probably could have a tough time putting one foot in front of the other. And you would still win a football game because you can isolate people and therefore have some type of an attack that you can get them the ball and get it across that goal line and dealing with that stuff right there. So that is a big difference in the game. How to be able to exploit those weaknesses that you can find, and you don't have to exploit 11 of them. You got to be able to exploit maybe one or two of them, and you get a chance to win in dealing with that. Now, it helps to have those rest of those guys around to be able to be successful, but it if you have that, and you know, you can equate it to, it's a little bit like basketball where you can isolate somebody on half a quarter and be able to beat them and still score, perhaps, in dealing with that. So I think there's some carryover from one sport to another sport in people looking at those things and how and why they are successful. That's an interesting aspect of sport today. And I think it's true. It's true in football. But listen, it's true in all sports. And I don't care whether you're talking basketball or baseball or what, you look at how sophisticated it has become. And not only that, you got all kinds of means to be able to keep records today. Mm-hmm. Come on, when we first started, we had one page, and that was one formation, and you'd put that on a chair, and you'd walk around the table and put different plays on those formations, and you could have some idea of what they're running. Today, you sit down beside that computer, you start punching that stuff in, and you can get a stack of paper that might be a foot high, you know, on all the stats and so forth, that where and how and what time and when do they run this and versus when do they run that. Come on, that stuff was never around when we started, nor were you as highly detailed in being able to have some understanding of what you're doing or what they're doing as well.
Coach, as those changes have come, especially in the last decade, we've seen, I think, an acceleration of the spread offenses and tempo and RPOs. How have you been able to stay up with the game really over the course of your career, 52 years
with
learning?
The spread formation, we threw the ball in a spread formation in the 1980s. People thought we were nuts. What do you mean? You're running 30 different formations. You have personnel groups of maybe 12, 14, 16 different personnel groups that you're going to run a particular play. This group is in, you're running another particular play. That group's in. So you're running a couple different formations. These guys are in and so forth. You didn't do that when we first started. I mean, come on, you had your guys in that. Hey, you put your 11 out there, and they put their 11 out there, and there it was. And in fact, when I first came here, there were some guys that they when they blew the whistle to kick off, they weren't coming out until they blew the whistle to say you can't play anymore and dealing with that. So we've come a long ways.
Yeah, definitely. Coach, when you look at the way the player has changed over the course of time, and I know, you know, in looking through what some people have said about you, you've always taken care of the people in your program. What changes have you seen with being able to, or having to, I guess, adjust kind of your approach with the players over time and the way you might have to deal with them as all the different things in society have changed, from whether that's the technology or the way, you know, you've seen a lot of these guys. I mean, you look at in America, there's 50% divorce rate. So we see a lot more kids coming from, you know, single parent homes. Just dealing with all those changes over the course of time.
The role of head coach is not just a, hey, take that team out there on Saturday afternoons and see how you can stack up against your opponent on the other side of the field. I mean, that's just a tiny portion of it. I mean, the role that you play, I don't care whether it's a teacher, whether it's a diplomat, whether it's a disciplinarian, whether it's a father figure or an uncle figure or a big brother figure in dealing with that stuff right there. And the thing about doing it is if you're in the game and you're in the game for the right reasons, I mean, it's more than the game is played on Saturday afternoons. And if it's more than a game that's played on Saturday afternoons, how are you going to take care of those young lads that come to you as 17 or 18 or 19-year-olds, as older kids? And by the time they're 21, 22, or 23 years old, they're leaving your program as men. So if it's more than a game that's played on Saturday afternoon, what are you doing to make the difference? I mean, hey, listen, if they come to your school and they come to East Stroudsburg University, they're coming here to be able to get a college education and to graduate. And then if they want to play football, they have an opportunity to be the best they possibly can be in dealing with that. And I'm talking about whether it's trying to develop themselves in a weight room, develop themselves in the plyometrics, and be able to increase your speed, to be able to work on various techniques that they can work on with other guys. Give an example. Just the idea of the surface of the field. Come on. I think all of our games in the last couple of years have been played on the carpet, okay, an artificial surface. You say, what does that mean? That means that, hey, if a kid wants to go down to the stadium on February 16th and there's no snow on the field, if he and a bunch of guys want to throw the ball, they could throw the ball if they wanted to and dealing with that. And then, you know, you talk about developing the touch and the skill and the relationships of their timing and that thing right there. Suppose they work on that or they do that in the summertime when they go home in dealing with that. Then they come back in the fall. Hey, you never had that opportunity to be able to work on that portion of the game and that, and the sophistication of the patterns and how they're coordinated and all of that versus coverages. That is a big thing. But plus now you also are talking about that young man off the field. Okay, how about your study halls? How about your tutoring system? How about your academic support system totally in being able to be involved with that? Along with that, then what are you doing to develop the young man? And you say, what do you mean? And one of the things we used to do is we're sticker for time. So we say, hey, what time is it? And everybody says, well, this classroom, it says it's quarter after, and this classroom, it says it's five after, and another classroom, it says it might be 20 after. So that doesn't count. You talked about the kids today. Well, they all have cell phones. Mm-hmm. If they all have cell phones, they all have time, and they all have the same time. And if they don't have a cell phone, look at the Weather Channel. It's all the same. And that, so therefore, if you're supposed to be someplace, be there on time. Be there on time means you're there 5 minutes early. Now, when the kid gets there 5 minutes early, what are you going to do? Just let them stare at the walls and so forth? You can make an announcement. You can go up and see an individual and talk to them about this situation or circumstance that might pertain to them personally. Or you can go in there and say, hey, guys, pass me the salt and pepper. And they look at like you got three noses and say, what do you mean? Well, hey, you're a junior and you've started to have a relationship with a young lady on campus, and her parents invite you home for dinner. And her father asks you, could you pass me the salt or could you pass me the pepper? You don't sit there and just say, well, you want the pepper? I'll chuck it to you across the table or something like that. You want to make sure that you pass the salt and the pepper together. Now, we teach that stuff here to be able to do that. How do you walk your mother or your girlfriend down the street? What side of the street or what side of the sidewalk do you walk on to be able to do that? And that's so if you're talking about, if it's more than a game that's played on Saturday afternoons, how can they handle themselves not only on the field in a comfortable fashion? So therefore your practices are structured, so you put them in those situations that you're going to find them on Saturday afternoon. They're going to be able to practice that. So when they get there, they feel comfortable. They've been there and done that. Well, what happens off the field when they get in other situations? Or how do you shake hands when you go in for that interview? Or what kind of clothing do you wear? What colors do you wear in dealing with that to make you the most presentable and the most credible in trying to get that stuff right there? So when you talk about that stuff today, kids today think they're maybe a little more sophisticated. Perhaps they are because of the, I don't say their toys, but the implements that they have, the cell phones and all the stuff along those lines. But they're still kids, and they're still kids at 17 and 18. And when they leave you later on at 22 and 23, they're men. And therefore, if they're men, they should be able to understand what society is going to require of them for them to get a position and what they want to do in their lives, how they want to support their families, and how can they make a difference in their college or in their community that to make it better in doing that. And if you do that, then you're coaching for the right reasons. And I think you're coaching for big W's right there to be able to do that.
Most definitely, Coach. And I know a lot of the guys you've coached have gone on to have careers outside of the game. But three notable guys from your program who really are at the top of the coaching game right now that our coaches in the audience would recognize. Number one, James Franklin, head coach at Penn State. Harry Heistand, offensive line coach at the Chicago Bears. And Pat Flaherty, offensive line coach at the Jacksonville Jaguars. These are guys who, on your website, talk about all the things that they've learned from you. How proud are you to be able to see those guys really in a national spotlight, especially Coach Franklin, and how much do you see of your program and some of the things that he does?
Well, it's like this. I mean, if you just take the kid and you just say, hey, I got to make sure I win a few ball games on Saturday afternoon, and you don't care about him, why are you coaching? Okay, what it comes down to. If you take the young man that comes into you and say, hey, if my son was standing in the same shoes that young man standing in, what would I want from them? And what do I want from them, not only in everything they do in dealing with that? That means in the classroom, we talked about off the field, we talked about on the field, to be able to do that. And it doesn't make any difference where they play in the organization. They could be the last guy on the bench, or they could be the hero of the whole organization in dealing with that. And you want the same from all of those guys today in dealing with that. And those guys came here, and there's a story in all of them. You take Flaherty, Pat Flaherty, offensive line coach at the Jaguars. He came here. His dad was a coach as well. And he came here, and he was a captain, and he was an All-American for us. James Franklin came here. I came back. And I recruited him, and I said, hey, guys, I got a quarterback right now, great athlete. He threw the ball 38 times, and the offensive coordinator said, in one game? I said, no, he's a wishbone quarterback. He threw 38 times in a year. And they turned around and said, are you nuts? Be able to handle a situation like that and be able to that. And James came and developed, and he's still, I think, one of the greatest scramblers that ever played in our PSAC conference right here to be able to do that. And his defensive coordinator, Brent Pry, he was a grad assistant for us. His dad coached for us for 11 years with us right here. And then you take Harry Heistand is a story by himself. He transferred in after the first semester of his college career. And he's out for spring ball, and he comes out for spring ball, and the first hitting we do is a simple one-on-one with the offensive line and the defensive line. He was an offensive lineman, and he blew out his shoulder on the first shot. Next day, I walk in the office, and he says, he's crying. I said, what are you crying for? He said, I just saw the doctor and said I can't play football anymore. I said, okay. So what do you want to do? He said, I want to coach. I said, good. Follow our grad assistant around. And he followed him around that year, and then he continued to work. And really, he went through step by step, and he did it all. And so he did everything that you would expect anybody to do in an organization. And by the time he was a senior, he was coaching pretty well. And we got him a part-time position here, and we would take them on trips. Every spring break, we would travel all over the United States. In fact, we've been in Division I schools from Michigan to Notre Dame to Tennessee to Alabama to Florida State to Boston College, and draw a circle around that in the United States. We've been in all those schools. Listen, if there was an extra seat in the car or the van, he was there. And sometimes it wasn't a bed in the place that we stayed. So he'd sleep on the floor. And that's part of it. And that's learning the hard way. But Harry, he goes on, and we go to North Carolina, and John Matsko down there. And I think he's a line coach right now with Charlotte. I talked to Harry that night. I said, "Harry, how'd you do today?" He said, "Coach," he said, "John Matsko, the line coach, he knows everything about offensive line play." He said, "But there was a guy down there, kind of a ball-headed guy. He thinks he knows everything." I said, "Harry, you know that little short guy? You think he's a rotund guy?" I said, "He happens to be the head coach at Ohio State." And so he's laughing a little bit. And then next year we go south. I think we're going to South Carolina and Clemson and Georgia. And we stop at the Naval Academy. And John Matsko was at the Naval Academy this year. So he says, "Denny," he says, "hey, can you leave Harry with me?" He said, "We start spring ball tomorrow and I need some help." And so forth. I think so. Let me just talk to him. And he says, "Yeah, I'll do that." And I said, "We'll pick you up next Saturday coming home from the trip." So we left him with John for the week. And doing that winter, I get a phone call from John. "John, where are you?" He says, "I'm at Southern Cal." Then he says, "I need a GA. He said, "You think Harry might be interested?" I says, "I think so, but you better talk to him." 2 days later, he's on his way to Southern Cal to be a grad assistant. And then from there, he ends up in a Rose Bowl. And then he starts his coaching career. Mm-hmm. And he ends up with the Chicago Bears. And he goes to the Notre Dame. And he won the Joe Moore Award. It just so happened that I started coaching with Joe Moore in a high school 56 years ago, in dealing with that. So you talk about the big circle that you go around. And then he has the opportunity to go back with the Chicago Bears. And Vic Fangio there, the defensive coordinator, he was at East Stroudsburg as well. So, you know, we get some guys around with that. And, oh, by the way, that grad assistant that he followed around his freshman year, that was Pat Flaherty. He was our grad assistant at that particular time. Now, here's the rest of the kick to the story. The rest of the story is he followed him around, all right. He married Pat Flaherty's sister. Okay, so that's kind of the big circle around here. But we have a number of guys that are coaching in all levels, whether it's the NFL, Division I, Division II, Division III, in high school, in junior colleges. And, hey, listen, it just depends upon what kind of creatures you like to work with.
Mm-hmm. Coach, the family is such an important thing to you, and making sure that your coaches are taking care of family as well. And our profession is sometimes very hard on families if guys don't handle it the right way. For example, spending 16 hours in the office 7 days a week, being on the road all the time, you can really lose sight of what's important if you don't prioritize that. How are you able to promote that with your coaches, that has to be a priority for you, that family has to
be? Well, a couple things to start off with. Number one, you're the head coach, okay, of the family. And you make sure you take care of that team first and being able to do that. If the kids want to come around the office, let them come around the office. If they want to come to practice, let them come to practice. Let's get them involved with it. And then, hey, when we have some time off, it's not time for you to go down to the local bar and tip a few. It's time for you to go home and spend some time with your family along with that. I think, too, and I teach a course in coaching. One of the things I talk about is the family. And one of the things and the studies that tell us about coaching is I don't care whether the male or the female coaches in the family. The other spouse thinks that they spend too much time in or with the team in dealing with that. So, therefore, if you get time off someplace, go spend it with the family. Go spend it with the family in a quality time and whatever it might be in dealing with that. If you have an opportunity to go see your son or daughter is in a play or on an athletic team, go and make sure you get there and find some way to be able to get there. It means if you got to spend time when they go to sleep to do your work, that's fine too. We have no clocks in our office. What that means is you come, you get your work done, and you go home. We're not one of those groups that just says, hey, you're going to come in here and spend desk time just looking at the walls or the bulletin boards in front of your desk and so forth. Get that done to be able to do that. So we look for involvement, and we also be able to make sure their families are welcome in everything that we do too.
Coach, when we talk about the game changing, I know there's a lot of people out there who have concerns for the future of our game. And you read a lot in the media about football's dangerous, how there's issues with concussions or injuries, et cetera. When you look at some of those concerns, how do you feel about the future of our game? Is it in good hands?
I believe it is, because any time there's ever been a problem, if you got a problem, you want it solved, give it to a coach, because that's what they do all the time in dealing with that. We know about the concussions. We know about the equipment, and we know about that. And well, how do you handle all of that? First of all, you handle it with rules. I was on a rules committee one time for 4 years with the American Football Coach Association and dealing with that. And one of the major things that they're looking at is the safety of the individuals who play. And they can change the rules to make sure they're going to eliminate hazardous play. The other thing is making sure that we teach the game in the proper fashion. So you're talking about clinics, you're talking about publications, you're talking about books, you're talking about visitations where you go and see people do it in the right way to be able to do that. And then you also take a look at how and what we're doing with the game. And I don't know whether you know this or not, but the most popular sport in numbers and participants from 6-year-olds to 12-year-olds in the last 3 years has been flag football. Mm-hmm. And 18% of the group right there are girls. So that means that everybody can play the game in dealing with that. Why can't they go out and run, catch, and throw? And okay, you pull a flag off their waist to be able to have that. Why can't they do that? Do they have to go out there and have third down and one on the 1 yard line to see if they could put it in? I'm not sure 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 year old understands the physical aspect of the game. If you're a kid who's 70 pounds and you're playing against some gorilla that's 120 pounds and he all of a sudden hits you in the wrong way, what are you thinking? Man, this game's not fun. I think I'll go to something else to be able to do that. Why not let them have some fun? Take all the kids in the neighborhood, all the boys, all the girls, go out and have a good time playing with the game. And now once they start to get into junior high and maybe eighth grade even, when they start to understand a little bit about the physical aspect, start to bring that into the game. And if you look too, we're not in that frontal attack anymore. So therefore, we're spreading people out. We're spreading people out. One of the things you know in the safety about this is where you have large number masses of people, you have more chance for injury. If you have one here and one there, two here and two there, you have less chance for having those accidents or injuries to kids to be able to play the game. So we're doing some things with rules. We're doing things with our teaching. We're doing things and looking at the game and how it's played and at what level. We should introduce various aspects of the game. I think that they're turning that around, and some of the research that they're doing now, not only sponsored by the NCAA, but also sponsored by the Department of Defense, too, in dealing with that. There's a big study going on right now with that. And then you have the equipment manufacturers manufacturing helmets today that are a heck of a lot different than when we started back 50-some years ago.
Definitely. I got one of those old helmets that I played with sitting on my shelf right here, and it's one of those suspension helmets, Coach. There's not much padding in it.
No. That your head had to be suspended in that. And with your head being suspended in that, if you got a haircut, it wasn't the same helmet.
No.
You had before you got the haircut, and the thing would start to spin for you. So that they don't have those anymore. And basically, there's only two types of helmets. There's a suspension helmet, and there's a padded helmet. Well, they've gotten to the padded helmet today, and it fits everybody, because not only that, they have large, medium, and small helmets, but then they have padding in there, and then the padding also, they have air in there to make it fit to your particular head style to be able to do that. As long as you keep checking your air every week, a couple of days, you're okay with that area right there. So the equipment has come a long ways as well.
Coach, what advice would you give a young coach who's looking to make it in this profession?
One, do it right. Do it right. Understand the ethics of the game. Understand the rules of the game and follow them. And if you have to compromise that for anything, get out in doing that. You owe it to the game. You owe it to the people you coach, and you owe it to the institution that you represent, and from whatever that might be, from the high schools, to the colleges, to the professional in dealing with that. And then make sure that, hey, you do everything you possibly can to make that person that's on your team a better person when they leave your team than when they came in, and do it in all aspects. That's physically, mentally, psychologically, and if not spiritually as well in dealing with that. And we all, you know, have different likes about, hey, what do we like on offense? What do we like on defense and so forth? But that's the excitement of the game. But if you use those points right there, the essence of the game, and treat people the right way, it should be one of the greatest experiences in the life of that student athlete. Because how many places do they get to prepare themselves to work in a collegiate atmosphere dealing with a number of people? I mean, what other area do you get to go out and say, hey, it's not me and it's not I, it's we and us that got to be successful? I mean, a kid can do the right thing and execute all the skills that are required, and then all of a sudden, one of his buddies jumps off sides, and that just blew the whole play up in dealing with that. So you're talking about teamwork. You're talking about dedication. You're talking about, hey, the idea to interact where everybody counts and whatever they do, whether you're going to go out there and play 72 plays or whether you're going to go out there and maybe kick four extra points or something in a game. Everybody has a responsibility, and they have accountability, not only to themselves, but to the rest of those guys that they're playing with. If they learn that principle, whether they're the best kid in the squad or the last kid on the squad, when they leave the game, they're going out and have an opportunity to succeed in what they choose to be able to be their life's endeavor in dealing with that. That's what I would tell somebody that's getting into the game.
Coach, in exiting the game, in retiring from the game, I think you had the most interesting retirement, I guess, ceremony that I've ever seen. Not a lot. I always talk to players about, like, this game ends for everybody, and a lot of the times for most of us, it's not going to end the way we want. We're not going to be in control of that. But I think in terms of that, you took control of this in a way that I've never seen. Can you talk about what you did, the way you retired at the end of the 2018 season?
Well, the situation was this. I realize I'm a dinosaur from the standpoint that I was at a school for a long period of time, was a head coach for a long period of time, and dealing with that. So that put that on the table first. Second thing is I coached because I had a great passion for the game, and I loved coaching in all aspects. I don't care whether it was on the field or in the weight room or in the recruiting or putting the O&A's stuff together in the off season so we're ready to go for next season, all of that. So I thoroughly enjoyed all aspects of coaching. But I also said, hey, it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun doing a lot of different aspects, meeting a lot of great people while we're doing it. And this past year, we came out of preseason, and my brother was with me. He's retired and lives in West Palm Beach, Florida. And I started asking him some questions. He's retired and he used to coach basketball as well. And talked about what did you like when you retired? What didn't you like when you retired? If you had to do it over again, what would you do? And it just didn't seem right at that particular time for me. Okay. It wasn't as much fun. I didn't get the great joy that normally we'd get out of all of those things. And from preseason to the early season. And then I called about six or seven coaches around the country and asked them the same questions I asked my brother. But all of them were indirect. So therefore, it wasn't like, hey, are you going to retire? They had no idea what we were doing and asking questions, maybe ask one question and talk about who's in a World Series or who's looking pretty good in their preseason, early season games and that and the game of football and dealing with that. And then after I talked to all those coaches, I said, hey, maybe it's time for me to hang out the whistle. So what do you want to do? And I came to two conclusions. One, I did not want to be a lame duck coach. I wanted to coach right up to the last minute. That's it. I'm out of here. And then the second thing was this. I did not want to be a distraction. I wanted to be a golf tournament in the fall. I didn't want it to be around that. Or I didn't want it to be around homecoming. Or our school is 125 years old, and we had a big banquet here. And didn't want that to be a thing. And we happened that same week, the week I retired, we lost a former player. And he was a great one for us. A great individual, great person to help us with our Warrior Football Club and dealing with that. And he passed, and it was tough on the team that he played on because he was the first one to go. And all those guys had to go back and check themselves to make sure that their S was still on their chest. And maybe it wasn't on there as tight as they thought it was in dealing with that. And then I said, okay, when would you do it? And I said, well, maybe the last home game. And it was the last home game. That's for our seniors. So I don't want to be a disruption there in dealing with that. So I figured I'll take the last 30 seconds of the game. And I started to plan the thing out, just the same as you game plan the thing. Where am I going to park my car in relationship to the gate that I'm going to go out? Make sure you got a whistle in your pocket. So when you call timeout, you can blow the whistle to get your kids there in a hurry. So we planned all of that. Told no one about this. I told my wife the Wednesday before Saturday that it happened. And I talked to our president the Friday afternoon at 2:00. Saturday was going to take place. So those were the only two people that had any idea. In fact, my daughter and her son-in-law and two out of the three grandkids that they have were grads of East Stroudsburg University here. They were at the game. They didn't have a clue for the simple reason that for the last 15 years, I was always asked, hey, when are you going to retire? Or are you planning on retiring? So I figured if I told one person I was retiring and not another person I was retiring, they would think, hey, why'd you tell him and not me? And I didn't want that. So I didn't want to be a distraction there to be able to do that. So I came to this conclusion, hey, what I'm going to do is in the last 30 seconds, we're going to call timeout. Well, that was all great. And we went down through, and at the end of the third quarter, we're playing Ohio Dominican, and they got a great football team out there. And they have us 31-0. And I'm thinking, hey, I got a manager to go over and check the gate. I was going out to make sure the gate was open and dealing with that. And we're going there. All of a sudden, Keith, with a couple minutes to go, the score is 34-28. And I'm figuring, wait a minute. We're not going to save one of those timeouts for some ball-hitting guy, coach to retire. We got a chance to win this thing. So, hey, we got a chance to win this thing. We're going to use everything we got to be able to do that. So we call all the timeouts. And finally, we ran out of downs with 12 seconds to go. And they had the ball, and they came out and took a knee. Well, as soon as they came out, I nudged the official in front of me, and I said, sir, we've used all our timeouts. I know I'm going to call the fourth timeout. It's illegal. You're going to penalize us, but I'm going to call it with about 4 seconds to go. We're inside of 10 seconds, so it's a runoff. So if we call that timeout, it's the same thing as calling the game. Because you're going to run those 10 seconds off. We had no more time on the clock in dealing with that. So what happened was that when they got the ball, they first play, they took a knee, and the run it down to 4 seconds, told the official, timeout. He called it, and I took my whistle out of my pocket and blew it and said, hey, guys, come here. I want to talk to you. I told him, hey, I'm hanging my whistle up, gang. I love all you guys. I'm out of here. See ya. I walked across the field, and everybody's kind of wondering what's going on now. And I waved to the Ohio Dominican coaches, said, hey, great game. Your kids played well. Congratulations on your victory. And by the way, I'm retiring. And all and those coaches did a class thing right there. They all came out and shook my hand. I wasn't prepared for that.
Yeah.
And deal with that. And then I walked towards the gate that was going out, told my wife the night before, I said, hon, I'll tip my hat to you. Tell you I still love you. And I did that and walked out of the gate, 15 yards outside the gate. I got into my car, started it, drove out, and drove home with a smile on my face. And that was it.
Coach, that's an incredible story. I love it. Thank you for sharing that. Wow. I'm like a little choked up about it. That's an incredible way to do it. Wow. Thank you for sharing that. Coach, my last question for you. 53 years, 44 as the head coach. You've seen it all. If I were to ask you, Coach, point to the one thing that really gave your teams, your guys, whether that was on or off the field, gave them the winning edge.
The one thing, I don't know whether it's a one thing or not, and don't ask, it's a combination of all the stuff that you do. I mean, you got to have a passion to play. You got to have a good work ethic to be able to get into the weight room and do the plyometrics at 6 a.m. when it's 0 degrees outside, and then you're walking to the field house to get this stuff done. You got to have a passion to be able to love your teammates, because they're playing for you and you're playing for them, to be able to handle that. And then you got to go out and be willing to lay it on the line and understand how to handle success and also how to handle adversity. And there's ways you can go about, and we teach it here, to be able to do that and be able to take that and play the game for 60 minutes. When it's over, it's over. And be able to say, hey, if we're successful, we will win in a gentlemanlike fashion. And when we are not successful, well, let's get back to work to see if we can't start to win the next one, to be able to do that. And if people will do that, they'll have an opportunity to play in one of the great games that is on this planet right now.
Coach, thank you for sharing all your insight into the game. Thank you for sharing your stories, and thank you for your contributions to the game over 53 years. Guys like you make a difference. You've helped out a lot of guys along the way and set the example. And on behalf of our listeners, again, thank you for your time and for your contributions to the games.
Hey, Keith, great talking with you. You're getting the Poconos. Hey, bring your golf clubs. We'll have some fun now.
That sounds
Look
good,
forward
Coach.
To it. Thank you.
All right.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.